Welcome back. You're listening to Voices of the Middle East on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. This is Gudar Zaktadari, your host. My guest tonight is Mr. Sharif Akil, who's a litigating attorney for Abu Ghraib victims. And apparently we have a caller waiting. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi. First of all, thank you very much for the work you're doing. Just as an American, that's ashamed of the road we're taking. I really appreciate that there are some that are willing to, step up and try to get the job done and take this thing in the other direction if possible.
Thank you.
The couple of questions I have is one is kind of more general, just to get your viewpoint of what do you think this thing is really a part of a larger scheme to perhaps create an enemy, because these acts have an direct personal effect on the people and the country itself, but they also have an effect in all of the countries in the Middle East and of allies in Europe and the whole world. And I guess my opinion would be is we're really this is a systematic approach that someone's decided that we need to create an enemy for the next century, and we're just doing an excellent job of creating disgust and hatred and turning people that really loved America against us for, generations to come. And I'd like to get your opinion on that. And then specifically, these people that are going in, that the army that are going in, getting permission to go in the middle of night and disrupt people's houses and take their possessions and take them away. Those people are still, as far as I know, most of the army people are still there. So where is all this stolen loot? Can we get some of this back? I mean, is it in the barracks or where is it?
I share many of the sentiments. But one of the things, one of the goals I had in mind when we went to Iraq. I took a risk there. I knew if anybody knew I was an American there in the area, that this was an issue. But I was so outraged by what happened, that outrage turned into just something had to be done. And when I was there, I was telling every detainee, everyone that I interviewed, I said, I'm sorry what has happened to you. This is not America. These are people who say they're Americans, but I'll tell you what also. Now, this was in a discreet location when once their guard was down and they knew who I really was. We had a complaint, the lawsuit translated in Arabic. They recognized that I was someone there trying to help them. Then I told them I was American. I was telling them, I'm an American also. And if the Americans heard what is going on here, they would be so disturbed and disgusted. And I'll tell you something, the reason why I'm here is because there is a process under democracy to right a wrong, where in other regimes there wasn't a process, something happens, it's just brushed aside. In this day and age, in the form of democracy America subscribes to, every person will be held responsible for their actions. And we're going to right every wrong, whatever we have to do, including getting your property back and to get you some of your dignity back. And so the jury's out in there. It remains to be seen what happens. Thank God there's the court-martial proceedings. They are trying to do their thing against the American military. You have the congressional hearings. They're trying to expose and to figure out, is this a policy, and how high up the chain of command is this? Because it seems to me that it was prevalent and not just involving five or six. And we have the civil arena, such as myself, one of the attorneys, doing what we can do to hold these contractors responsible. If the end result bears fruit in holding every single person responsible for the acts that they committed on Iraqi people, I think we're going to send a strong message. because we're trying to, the claim we're filing, the Alien Tort Claim Act, is recognizing something, that whether you're American or whether you're Iraqi, it doesn't matter. You're a human being, and you deserve to have the same dignity, an American citizen, as an American citizen. And this is what we're trying to accomplish here. I was in Iraq, and one thought that kept coming in my mind is, I wish American people would see what I'm seeing. I wish they would hear what I'm hearing. And the only way to do this is to bring this out in a public forum, so hopefully, you know, we can hold, flesh out those wrongdoers, you know, and those people who engage in this act, and then try to get back on track and hopefully seek some peaceful, you know, solution for this.
You are referring to Geneva Convention, Sharif.
Yes.
Does that apply to all Iraqis or special categories?
All Iraqis. There is a very specific language in the Geneva Convention to protect the dignity of each prisoner, to respect their religious rights, to feed them correctly, even to provide them the proper temperature, even to try to keep them in the same facility as the guards in the same similar situation. So the Geneva Convention is universally accepted, and it is a norm of international law, and the contractors, as well as American personnel, had a duty to abide by those norms. And those individuals that did not abide by them, you know, we're going to do what we can to hold those individuals accountable.
What is the timeline for your process, and who exactly are you going to sue?
Well, we sued already. The lawsuits in San Diego. We sued CACI. CACI is headquartered in Virginia. They furnished the interrogators. They basically the government subcontracted out some of its military gathering services, some of its services to, you know, interrogation services to a company. And then, so the company went there. And another company we're suing is Titan. They furnished the translators. We have narrations of translators also engaging in wrongful conduct of hitting and beating, and they're doing more than just translating. So those two companies are the ones that were, and an interesting policy, an interesting issue comes up, because when the company goes there to engage in interrogation, they are servicing, there's two masters. They have the masters of the military and their shareholders. And, you know, they're there to try to get results, get information, and then get more contracts. And that may not necessarily be always consistent with the nation's best interest, which is to always abide by the Geneva Convention and the norms of international law. So maybe many of the interrogators abided by the law, but maybe some did not for other reasons. That's something that remains to be seen.
Well, some staff, like the people who are now being court-martialed, the Lindy England type of people.
Right.
They were working for Army, correct?
That's correct.
And so they are also were they interrogator or were just doing it for fun?
That's an excellent point, because the lines are fuzzy here. Duties overlapped. The people, the responsibilities were not defined. Detainees that we talked to, some of them were confused. Some translators acted like they were interrogators. Some interrogators the translators act like they're interrogators. The translators dressed in uniform, in military uniform. Sometimes interrogators dressed in uniform, sometimes they didn't. But what was something very interesting is that they universally, in a uniform fashion, would mask their identity by covering their name tag, taking their jacket off, and just with their shirt. So the detainees don't know who is interrogating them and what their names are. And this is something that, you know, that we found prevalent in the various accounts provided to us by the detainees.
You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. I'm speaking with Mr. Sharif Akil. He's a litigating attorney for Abu Ghraib prisoners, the prison victims, basically. And we're talking about the issue of Abu Ghraib tortures. The phone number here is 503-231-8187. If you have any question, you can call in. The question I have for you, Sharif, is how top is this going? I mean, as far as hierarchy in the military and others, from your finding, who are involved?
Well, right now, one thing is clear. The Taguba report identified a specific individual from Kachi, Stefanowicz, for setting the conditions for abuse. The Taguba report also identified Adel Nakla, who was later fired from Titan. Then the Schlesinger report came out and the Fay report came out. The Fay report recommended criminal prosecution for certain contractors. And right now there are hearings underway to determine exactly how wide is this, how pervasive, who was involved in setting the conditions for abuse. This is a question mark right now. How high up the chain of command does this go? That's still something I'm trying to dig for. But I'll tell you that the fruits of our labor, the one thing that's very interesting is that those three reports I mentioned, the Fay, the Taguba, and Schlesinger, were made by the government, and they are provided from they provide you their investigation from the military's eyes. Our trip in Iraq, in interviewing the various detainees, provide us a perspective from the detainee's eyes. So we're getting both versions. Basically fitting a piece of the puzzle to determine the extent of those individuals that were involved.
You said that you're working with the Center for Constitutional Right, correct?
That's correct.
And this is basically it's not a for-profit organization.
That's correct. They are a non-for-profit organization, and they were successful recently in seeking in obtaining a Supreme Court ruling, United States Supreme Court ruling, on behalf of the Guantanamo Bay detainees, where they can question why they're being detained in court. So the Center of Constitutional Rights has experience in the foreign arena, as well as there's another law firm that has a specialty in class actions. So we formed a good team to pursue this.
Can you give us some, maybe a website address for people if they want to get in touch and kind of follow up on what's going on with your case and how far it goes?
Sure. I can give you my email, and I can give you the Center of Constitutional Rights website, which provides a copy of the complaint and gives you periodic updates. The website is ccr-ny.org, and the email is Sharif Akil at voyager.net.
Thank you, Sharif. We have another caller that I will bring on. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, one of the questions I have, and I'll ask the question to take it off the air. I understand some prisoners that were Iraqi prisoners were farmed out to other Arab countries for interrogation. I'd like to know if they know approximately how many are being held in what countries and what information have they gathered on those prisoners and how they've been treated. I'll take it off the air. Thank you.
Boy, that's an excellent question. This is a mystery. There are prisoners right now known as ghost detainees, which has been the subject of extensive hearing discussions in Congress today. And we have spoken with detainees who have stated they don't know where their sibling is. They don't know, and their whereabouts are unknown, and no response from the military has been provided to them to tell them of their loved ones. So this is a whole another dimension of this of our investigation that we have yet even began to tap the surface on. You know, they're practically invisible, unaccountable, unheard of, unknown, and we just have no idea where their destination has been. But hopefully through witnesses coming and family members coming and telling us, hey, this loved one, we don't know where he's at, maybe we'll be able to trace these people down. Again, it's going to be a process.
Do you have any idea of, because the some of the prisoners were apparently killed.
Yeah.
Do we have any count of those in Iraq?
Oh, this is another whole dimension. We have one son who saw his father die. His father was 63 years old. His father was stripped naked and sent outside and had cold water poured on him and was beaten. And then he came in and his back was blue, and then 3 days later he died. And then they said he died of natural causes. We have heard of a detainee we interviewed, a doctor, who said he was trying to get medical treatment for a detainee who was falling ill, and they would not give him the treatment, and he died. This same doctor was trying to treat another individual who was made to sit on an engine of a Hummer, and his buttocks and scrotum was burnt. And we've heard of accounts of individuals dying, just, you know, dying from the torture. And I haven't even began to talk about the rape incidents that many witnesses saw or were subjected to. I tell you, by the end of the day, when you hear these stories, you don't know what you think, like you're in a twilight zone, like you're in a nightmare, and you feel queasy and you just can't sleep. You just wonder how this happened.
Another question I have is, have you? I mean, I guess at the beginning you kind of mentioned that you couldn't find or identify any reason for all these behaviors, but have you interviewed basically the interrogators or the military personnel in the prison ward? I mean, what is the purpose of all these?
Well, the claim purpose is to gather information. That is from the accounts. That is the purpose of interrogating. So, but you gotta interrogate within the bounds of the law, and within the Geneva Convention. You do not transgress that. And when one man tells me, or several, when a boy tells me, at night you'd be urinated on to wake up. When a man over 60 years of age tells me he was fasting, and then a woman came with some belt and a fake, genitalia, sodomizing him just to humiliate him and just devastate him spiritually. And then after that, they don't ask him any questions. It's, to me, sadistic. It's very, very disturbing. They just basically looked at the Iraqis as just subhuman, and I just can't fathom how someone can stoop this low and engage in such conduct, and for what purpose, I don't know.
Well, I kind of feel that you are, we put you in a kind of bad situation. You're so emotional with what you have seen, and I want to really appreciate your willingness to talk to us today, Sharif, and thank you very much. We're getting close to the end of the program. If there's any final thought that you want to share with our listeners, please do that.
Yeah, well, I just know everybody's held for their own responsibility. And America in general is good, and we got to just show our goodness, especially in a country that we are occupying. And it, one way to show our goodness is to show support for the detainees, to show support for the system, the democratic system, to hold those accountable, to pressure the Congress people to conduct further investigations, to continue expressing support on the radio or concern or provide comments, to make sure to that every Iraqi knows that they are also human beings and they are entitled to the same dignity as every American and every other person. And that's really all we can do from this end, but I think it'll speak volumes later.
Well, thank you very much, Sharif, for being with us today, and I hope we can talk to you again in the near future when your case is getting more on the way.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Sharif. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
city of